Herschel spat back, his voice low as he tried to keep it from quivering.
"Have it your way,"
Coach George replied. Herschel wasn't able to stop the next scream that rose, or any of the many that followed. 150. George, he had ceased to think of himself as a coach since this night's inception, was both surprised and aggravated. The tear-stained butterball now panting on the truck's cockeyed floor had held on longer than he'd expected. It had taken no less than 7 breaks in his arm to finally force Herschel to let go. Of course, George could have just ripped the damn thing off in the first place. However, he knew that wouldn't have sat well with the man at the top of the ladder. George turned his back on the softly weeping boy and readjusted his grip on Mary. It didn't matter that he'd been slowed down. All that mattered was the girl. That was his job, and that was what he would deliver. George was a singularly focused man. He took care of the mission at all costs. That was what made him a great hero, and, ironically, what had knocked him down to the point of teaching snot-based brats how to fight. George stepped out into the crisp, late spring night. He flexed his rudders and checked his energy levels. Flying took some extensive warming up of his leg thrusters, but he was nearly there, even with Herschel's delay. He'd be ready to take off in less than a minute. George made it fewer than 5 steps away from the battered vehicle when a pillar of flame thick as a fist came rocketing past him, missing only by a few inches. It struck the ground several feet away, the tar immediately bubbling at the sudden influx of heat. It was a bold move, one that gave away both position and tactical advantage in favor of declaring one's intentions. George knew plenty of fire users, but only one stupid enough to make an opening gambit like that. He turned around to greet his opponent.
"Reynolds?"
George acknowledged, his voice tinged with an electronic variable. Vince stood down the road, illuminated by the still smoldering spot at George's back. The air around him shimmered as its temperature was forced upward. He was practically leaking energy. The guy must have absorbed a house fire or something. Gone were any traces of the happiness and optimism that usually peppered his expression. In their place was a vicious stare, and eyes that said quite clearly that the only way one of them would come away from this was in a broken, bloody mess. It was a shame things had to go this way. George felt like he could have sculpted the kid into a real warrior.
"Let Mary go," Vince demanded. His tone wasn't angry or impatient. It was calm and flat as the waters of an abandoned bathtub.
"Sorry, Reynolds. Not gonna happen," George replied.
"What if we say pretty please?"
Nick Campbell stepped into view from behind the front of the truck. He must have been making sure Persephone was down for the count. Smart kid. He edged slightly closer to his friend, though the emanating heat forced a healthy distance between the two. In his hands were a pair of guns, one a standard black pistol, but the other a long-barreled silver six-shooter.
"Campbell, I thought you were one of the bright ones. What are you doing out here?"
George just needed a little more time to charge up, and he could get away without having to risk his unconscious package in a throwdown with these kids.
"Friendship can make us do some spectacularly stupid things," Nick replied.
He squeezed the trigger with his right hand,
and sparks flashed off George's torso as the bullet ricocheted.
"Whoa, kid! Not even a warning shot?"
"That was the warning shot," Nick replied evenly. George assessed the situation and weighed his options. Reynolds was pissed off enough to actually fight worth a damn, and clearly hopped up on more energy than usual. Campbell was practically worthless if all he had was a pair of guns, but he could be surprisingly clever, and behaved like he had ice water in his veins. Adair was floating overhead, trying to stay unnoticed as she clutched a huge rock. Whatever their plan was, it couldn't be that sophisticated. Still, he was under strict orders to deliver the girl undamaged, and with kids this inexperienced, they could easily make a mistake and injure their friend. "Last chance," Vince said, taking a step forward. Flames began swirling in his hands as he prepared to release a dual barrage of fireballs. "Let Mary go." At long last, George's thrusters came online and showed a ready status.
"Thanks, but no thanks," George replied.
His robotic face wasn't really equipped to smile, though it did put forth an impressive level of effort. He activated the thrusters and began to lift off the ground. It was only because of his enhanced hearing that George was able to make out the gunshot over the roar of his leg engines. He did see the barrel of the six-shooter in Nick's left hand flash, and that was the last thing he saw for several seconds. A white-hot explosion of light erupted in front of his eyes, blinding his sensors and forcing him back to the ground. He heard another sound, the soft whistle of an object in freefall, and put two and two together. The idiots had shot something to blind him so Adair could drop that stupid rock on him. It was a completely brainless plan, and the only person it might genuinely hurt was Mary. George threw up both his arms, gauging the rock's strike point on sound alone. He managed to deflect it with his forearms, shattering it into a dozen pieces that scattered along the ground. It was only after George had lowered his arms and shaken his head in a vain attempt to get his visual sensors back to full functionality that he realized his left shoulder was considerably lighter. A quick glance to the rear confirmed his suspicions as a blonde figure holding a brunette one sped across the sky.
"You little shits," he cursed.
"Come on, did you really think we'd be stupid enough to fight you with Mary in danger?" Nick taunted. "A little misdirection is the key ingredient in any theft."
"I suppose it is," George agreed. "What was that thing you shot at me?"
His vision was finally clearing up as his system compensated for the damaged lenses.
"Phosphorus bullet. A little something one of my real teachers whipped up years ago," Nick replied, his own face having no trouble displaying its cocky grin.
"Nice job there, kid. Sincerely. Though I'm curious how you expected the rest of this to play out. You do realize I can easily catch that girl, right?"
"Actually, we didn't even know you could fly," Nick replied. "But it doesn't really matter."
"And why is that?" George asked.
"Because Mary isn't here to get hurt anymore," Vince answered. The silver-haired boy took three steps forward, and the inferno broke loose. 151. Alice rocketed through the air as fast as she dared move with Mary's, thankfully light, frame clutched in her grasp. She didn't know how the small girl was still asleep, though she was smart enough to guess it had something to do with the metal headband wrapped around her skull. Alice glanced behind her to see if Coach George was somehow following her. She'd been so shocked when he'd lifted off the ground that the rock had slipped from her grasp. It was fortunate Nick had fired in time for the plan to work, so she could steal Mary away in the confusion. Still, she had no idea how they were going to keep him busy long enough for her and Mary to get away. Alice slowed the pace at which she was cutting through the air. She needed to get Mary awake, which meant stopping to take off the headband. It was a risk, because Coach George might catch up to her in the time it took. Alice thought it was even riskier to continue through all this without Mary's help, though. Vince had assured her they could handle Coach George. Alice slowed to a hover and lightly descended to the ground. She would trust in her friends. George skirted another fireball and nearly stepped into a column of focused flames. George wasn't someone who normally feared a little heat. However, the flames that Reynolds was pumping out were intense enough to make him concerned for his inner circuitry. He pulled back and raised his arm to take aim, but the burning road made getting a precise bead on his target quite difficult. It certainly didn't help that Vince's attacks didn't need to be precise to be troublesome, as the boy had clearly spent his 2 weeks crafting the art of the area blast. Before George could get a shot off, a blazing wall rose up in front of him, obscuring his vision entirely. Vince soon burst through it, reabsorbing the energy around him while doling out new bursts of power. So far, the dance of these two warriors had been one of distance by necessity. Vince was keeping the area around him at high enough temperatures that George would sustain damage to enter it. This kept the older combatant's exceptional strength and skill restrained, while giving Vince a temporary advantage. George knew the kid never absorbed too much power, so sooner or later he would run dry, and George could put a swift end to this foolishness. Vince released another flurry, and George hurried to get out of the way. From a safe distance, Nick watched calmly as the world burned around him. Most people probably would have been surprised to see Vince fare so well against his former coach, given his performance all year. Nick was not one of those people. He had long ago noticed the pattern that indicated Vince was an all-on-the-line kind of fighter. He was good most of the time, yet he could never tap into his true potential. That was, of course, unless his back was to the wall. Then the guy could come out of his corner swinging. And if it was his friends in danger instead of himself, well, that was when you saw what good old Silver was really made of. Still, he couldn't keep this pace up forever, and they both knew it. Even if the fire's energy didn't run out, his own eventually would. He was using a lot of movement to try and keep George on the defensive, and that would take its toll. Nick had originally planned to get to the truck and slip Herschel some whiskey. However, a series of poorly timed fireballs had cut him off from access to it. That was okay. Nick knew he would get the chance to play his role soon enough. He just hoped it was at a point before all hope of victory was lost.
"Come on, come on, wake up already," Alice said, bobbing through the air.
She'd peeled the band off of Mary and taken back to the skies. However, the telepath had remained unresponsive.
"They need you, Mary. We need you. I need you. I don't know what to do without you,"
Alice pleaded to the unconscious form cradled in her arms.
"I don't know if I should even be running away right now. I know I can't help and I'd only be a distraction, but I'm tired of only being good at running away."
Alice moved upward in the air, hoping the chilly breeze would snap Mary into the waking world.
You know when you fought Chad in the midterms and I ran away? I hated that, and I almost came back. Nick convinced me that sometimes being a hero means knowing when to retreat, though. Knowing how to apply your assets so that they don't get in each other's way. Looking back at that moment now, I can't believe I fell for that bullshit. Then again, I fell for a lot of his bullshit. God, Mary, please wake up already! I want to talk to you, to tell you about everything that's happened, to get your opinion on what I should do. But most of all, I want to save our damn friends. And I can't do that. We need you.
Alice began flying faster, causing the wind to tear at her eyes and whip her hair about violently.
We need you, Mary. So please wake up.
George got off a series of shots, driving Reynolds back as he rolled away. It was bad luck that George's projectiles were bolts of energy, but good luck that Reynolds had never experimented with his repertoire enough to see if he could absorb them. Now was not the time to try and find out, so the kid had to dodge. Finally, given a bit of breathing room, George decided he had wasted enough time with this grudge match. There was no doubt he could still outfly the Adair girl, but every minute this went on meant finding her would be more difficult. Since Reynolds seemed to still have gas in the tank, George decided on an alternate method for victory. He dashed toward the truck, able to leap past the surrounding flames that had deterred Nick, and hopped in the back. He emerged moments later, right arm holding Herschel's battered body, and left arm wrapped around his throat, choking off any protests Herschel might have been voicing. For good measure, George finally used his thrusters and rose several feet into the air.
"Enough!" George screamed at his top volume. "Unless you're in the mood for barbecued hostage, I'd refrain from any more pyrotechnics."
Vince stopped in his tracks, a half-formed fireball reabsorbing into the hand that held it.
"There's a good student. Finally doing as you're told," George said from his airborne perch. "I swear, kid, if you'd shown that much spirit throughout the year, you could have been second in the class."
Vince returned his verbal volley with only a vicious stare.
"No demands that I release your friend? Good. Glad we're past that phase. Now here is what is going to happen. I'm going to fly off with your buddy in my possession. When I catch up with Alice, I'm going to trade him out for Mary. I'm then going to fly away, and you all are never going to see me again. Clear?"
Vince only glowered at the metallic man hovering in the air.
"Don't be such a sore loser, kid. Maybe you should have paid more attention in the dean's boring class. I mean, didn't it ever occur to you that I might use the one of you without powers as a human shield?"
"As a matter of fact, it did," Nick quipped from 20 feet away on George's right.
Nick's revolver barked its second shot, and Herschel forced out a strangled scream of pain. 152. George didn't really have the capacity to blink in his current form, but if he could, he certainly would have done so in surprise. Blood flowed from the fresh bullet wound in Herschel's right shoulder onto the dirty, gray metal of George's arm.
"Shit, Campbell, are you fucking blind? Not only did you try and shoot me with a bullet we both know wouldn't hurt, but you missed and hit your friend."
Herschel twitched violently for a few seconds before becoming still. George had just enough time to wonder if the boy had gone into shock when Herschel's head flung forward and then smashed back into George's face. The world morphed into static, as George was sent reeling through the sky and crashed to the ground, his grip and direction lost as he struggled to understand how his hostage had mustered enough strength to hurt him. Had George been able to pay more attention, he would have gotten an immediate answer to his question. For while it was Herschel Daniels that slipped from George's grasp, it was Roy Daniels who crashed into the ground. Nick and Vince dashed to his side. "Are you okay?" Vince asked. Nick didn't bother with a verbal query. He didn't know how long this transformation would last without supplementation. He pulled a silver flask from his pocket and slapped it into Roy's left hand. The right arm was dangling uselessly, Herschel's significant injuries all the more apparent on Roy's muscular form. Roy tore the top off the flask with his teeth and hurriedly gulped down the contents. He tossed it to his side and pulled himself up to a standing position. Glancing at the bullet wound in his arm, only then did he finally speak.
"You coated a bullet in whiskey?"
"Seemed like the fastest way to get it into your bloodstream," Nick replied.
Roy gave him a curt nod, then looked at the metallic figure that was moving toward them once more.
"I rang his bell pretty good, but we need to hurry if we want to keep him from flying off."
Vince gestured to Roy's arm.
"What happened? Are you sure you can fight with that?"
A dark look passed over Roy's face.
"I'm dead fucking sure. If Herschel can be man enough to hold on to that psycho's neck while he snaps his bones, then there's no way I'm backing down."
"The girls should be far enough away now. It might be prudent to retreat and heal," Nick pointed out.
"To hell with that. Do you know what Herschel's last thought was before I took over?"
Roy asked, his eyes unwavering from his formerly airborne opponent.
"Do tell," Nick sighed, already seeing where this was going.
"His last thought, after being kidnapped, beaten, and taken hostage by someone he trusted, was, 'Sorry about the arm.'"
The knuckles on Roy's left hand cracked with a thunder that left Lightning envious.
"No way I'm letting my little brother show me up like that. I owe that tin man son of a bitch. I owe him hard."
"I'll fight with you," Vince said, stepping next to him.
Roy stayed focused on the steadily approaching target, but Vince spared a glance over at Nick.
"In for a dime, in for a dollar," Nick replied, taking a few steps back, but raising his weapons. He was under no impression that he'd be able to make any more difference in wounding George, but perhaps a well-timed shot could prove a distraction. At this point, it was all he had left.
"Just for reference, how resistant to fire are you?" Vince asked Roy, with the little time that remained.
"No idea," Roy replied, "but I bet we're about to find out."
The knock on the Melbrook door was quickly followed by its forceful opening. Seconds later, Dean Blaine, along with a petite, elderly woman and a medium-sized man with jet-black hair, entered the living room.
"You two had better have a damned good explanation,"
Dean Blaine ranted.
"First your students get outed by one of their classmates, then you contact me that two of them are missing and point me toward another student who assures me the perpetrators were two of my staff. An accusation that would have been laughable if not for the fact that I am now unable to find either one of them. Now I come in here and find you both just sitting there, seemingly without a care in the world. So you'd both better tell me what is going on and where my students are, and I mean now."
Mr. Numbers and Mr. Transport both sat still as early morning in response. Mr. Move, however, stepped forward to meet the dean.
Dean Blaine, I can assure you that everything is well under control and you have nothing to worry about.
Dean Blaine strode directly by Mr. Move and leaned in to yell more at the sitting men.
Are you too deaf? I said I want to know what's going on.
Perhaps you would feel more at ease if you sat down and relaxed,
Mr. Move commanded. He was going to take hell for using his power on the dean, but it seemed unavoidable at the moment. However, things did not go as Mr. Move expected. Rather than hunkering down with the other two, Dean Blaine spun around and drove his fist into Mr. Move's temple with a single fluid motion. Mr. Move tumbled to the floor, not accustomed to taking blows, and certainly not from someone as experienced as Dean Blaine.
"I wasn't talking to you, whoever you are,"
Dean Blaine said to the now unconscious man.
"I was talking to these two."
These two were experiencing a tingle across their skin as they regained authority over their appendages. They exchanged a quick glance to confer that they were on the same page about coming clean with the dean, and found that they, in fact, adamantly were. Before they could rise to a standing position, however, Dean Blaine leaned in and placed a hand on each of their shoulders.
"Last chance, gentlemen. Where are my students?"
153. Roy threw a vicious haymaker that George sidestepped with ease. George capitalized on Roy's open side by delivering two quick jabs to the boy's ribs and then kneeing him in the diaphragm. Roy coughed as the wind left his body, and he sank to a knee. George moved in to put him down for good when a horizontal pillar of fire smashed into his head, momentarily blinding him and sending his temperature to dangerous levels. George was forced to roll away and regroup, a consequence of which was that Roy was afforded the same privilege. George had to admit it. Daniels had gotten a lot better since the start of the year. He was thinking his movements through, recovering well from hits, and fighting with a brain instead of all brawn. All those weeks slugging it out with the number one rank had done him a world of good. Not so much that he could pose an actual challenge to George, though. This fight would have been over in minutes if not for Reynolds doling out those flame-based blasts. Every time George went to return fire, Roy came at him in close range. The two were focusing on their specialties and keeping him off balance enough that he couldn't permanently remove either one from the fray. It was a terrible strategy if they wanted to win, but for buying time, he had to concede it was pretty functional. Somewhere deep down inside his metallic system, George felt a sensation akin to pride. The little dipshits had actually learned. George activated his thrusters and began rising into the air. Unlike his opponents, he had no compelling reason to try and win this fight. All he had to do was get away and recapture the Smith girl for delivery. Unfortunately, Roy had already recovered and was ready for this. He leapt several feet in the air, grabbing George by the leg and getting a face full of thruster fire for his trouble. Roy didn't even seem to notice. He pulled himself out of its range and tightened his grip.
"I'd think between you and your brother, one of you boys would think of a different strategy than just clinging on to me,"
George said.
"If it ain't broke, don't fix it,"
Roy snapped back. He tested his right arm and found it still unresponsive. He knew it would heal eventually, probably within the half hour. That just wasn't much help at the moment, though. It was a shame. If he'd had both appendages, he could have been hammering away on George while in this position. Instead, he was leaving himself wide open. Roy steeled himself for whatever was about to come. If Herschel could take it, so could he. For his part, George wasn't feeling particularly creative. He raised his own arm and fired off several bolts of energy into Roy's torso. The boy's grip was shaken as pain rippled through him, but he held on. George readied himself for another volley. However, he was forced to sweep through the air instead to dodge a flurry of fire from Vince on the ground.
"You little pains in the ass," George swore. "How long do you think you can keep this up? 2 more minutes? Maybe 5? It doesn't matter. I'll catch that girl before the sun is up, no matter what you do. I'm a trained, experienced, veteran hero, and you are just 3 cowards who got a little control. The 3 of you alone could never beat me."
George's arms suddenly shot out to his sides, and his legs snapped together, locking his whole form into a rigid lowercase T shape. Though his face was capable of only showing the barest emotion, Roy still recognized the look that swept through his eyes. It was the same one he'd worn on a fall night, only a few weeks into the school year. Roy turned his face to George and gave him the biggest smile he could muster.
"Guess it's a good thing they made 5 of us then."
Roy released his grip and fell away as George was sent violently slamming into the ground. The concrete exploded upward at the force of his impact, and cracks sprawled outward all the way to the road's edge. Before the dust could settle, George was airborne again, being lifted up and driven back into roughly the same spot with ever-increasing force. It was on his 3rd trip up that George finally saw her, the 5-foot-tall Valkyrie being lowered to the ground by her blonde escort. Their eyes locked for a moment before he slammed into the earth once more. The next time up, he used his thrusters to try and break free, but all that earned him was a faster return to the earth. George was impressed. He'd fought telekinetic supers before, and knew holding on to someone as strong as he was took a whole lot of power. The others were impressed as well, though that emotion was being steadily passed by fear for the prime position. In all the time they'd known Mary, she had always been calm and composed. A bit eccentric at times, certainly. However, her cheerful demeanor had faithfully shone through whatever other fleeting emotions were clouding the surface. That wasn't the Mary that strode across the concrete, though, moving steadily closer to the man who had taken her. This Mary wasn't cheerful, or kind, or motherly in the slightest. This Mary was pissed off. At long last, she reached the crater that bore a plethora of George-shaped dents in it. She stood over the edge and glared down, increasing the pressure on him so that moving even a finger would require tremendous effort.
"You kidnapped me," she accused.
"Only attempted to kidnap at this point," George pointed out.
He was feeling all those drops. Not even he was immune to that kind of assault. But he'd been through worse attacks and survived. He'd get free eventually. Mary couldn't keep up this level of power indefinitely. Even if she held him down and the others beat him up, George was confident nothing they had could truly put him down for the count.
"You hurt my friends," Mary continued.
"Now that one I'll give you. But in fairness, they started it."
"Do you feel even the slightest remorse for what you've done today?"
Of course, George replied. I regret that your friend interrupted me. Otherwise, I could have been done with this whole mess by now.
I suppose asking why you did it is a waste of time, Mary surmised.
Why don't you try reading my mind and see?
Mary shook her head.
I can't read you when you're in that form. Maybe that's how you hid this from me until it happened. I don't know, and I don't care. If you're not going to talk, then I won't bother asking.
Is this the part where you try to kill me?
No. This is the part where I make you what you made me. Helpless. Vince, drain him.
What? Vince asked.
What?
George near yelped.
He's not just metallic like Stella. He's a functional robotic life form. He was quite clear about that during our class. That means he's running on some kind of energy. Let's see what happens when that tap runs dry.
But what if it kills him? Vince asked.
Then stop before he dies, Mary instructed.
Vince thought about questioning her more, but then he saw the look in her amber eyes. Not just the rage, but also the fear. She'd been taken from a place she thought was secure by someone she thought she could trust. Now, she was just trying to hold it together until it was safe to break down. Vince looked at the face of the man who had done that to her, and he could swear there was a smirk on his robotic face. Vince set his resolve. He hopped down into the crater and pressed his hand against George's chest. He was surprised to feel electricity flow up his arm. Vince had half expected some super New Age form of power. Instead, it was a good old familiar current. Familiar only thanks to the man he was currently depleting. Vince wasn't sure if that was ironic or not. He'd never been good at figuring out what fit that definition. He knew it made him smile, though.
Wait! Stop!
George said, the first real hint of worry entering his voice.
You don't understand what you're doing!
I'm stopping you, Vince replied. I think I've got a good handle on it.
I'm saying there's more to this than you think. You don't understand the implications!
Vince increased the rate he was pulling the energy. George had quite a bit, but sooner or later, every well ran dry. He knew he was making progress, though, because George's voice was growing weaker.
You stupid kids! You have no idea!
There was a ripple across his body, and suddenly, the students were staring at their former teacher's human visage. George looked tired, but awake, as he stared up at the five faces peering down upon him. He'd been too cocky, too sure they couldn't hurt him. Now he'd have to wait, recover, and then ambush them when they weren't expecting it. George was still plotting his next move when a pair of well-manicured hands lifted his head from the rubble and slipped a silver band around it. After that, it was some time before he was allowed another conscious thought. Alice clapped the dirt off her hands and floated back up to the road level.
That should take care of him. Now, who is calling Mr. Transport?
If no one objects, Nick said, plucking his phone from his pocket, I think Alice and I are the only ones with non-smashed or melted phones, and since she made it last time, I believe it is my turn. The others signaled their agreement, and Nick punched in the number. We're ready to be picked up, he said. For the first time that year, An emotion Nick didn't intend crept into his next words. Happiness bounding free and plain for anyone with sense to discern. All of us. Dean Blaine handed Mr. Transport back his phone. The tall man took it and looked at the dean with uncertain eyes.
It was Mr. Campbell. It seems they're all safe and are requesting to be picked up,
Dean Blaine informed him.
This adds only more to the heap of explanations you gentlemen owe me.
Mr. Transport and Mr. Numbers both nodded. The last few minutes had been unpleasant. Dean Blaine had been significantly displeased with their story so far, and it was only going to get worse as they continued. They'd been fortunate he had consented to picking up Mr. Transport's phone, on the possibility it could be the students in question.
A heap of explanations, by the way, that you will be providing me. Tonight. But after you've retrieved your charges,
Dean Blaine said. He certainly wasn't going to make the children wait any longer than they had to. They'd surely had a hard enough night. It was time for things to get easier for them. As for their caretakers, on the other hand, their evening was only just beginning. 154. Morning found the Melbrook Quintet clustered in their living room, a firm lockdown being adamantly enforced. The television was on, but none of those sitting in the room were paying attention. Every now and then, Herschel would touch his shoulder, expecting pain to stab through his arm. A healer had been called during the night, so the physical damage had been completely negated. The other kinds were still unwelcomely present. Mary reached over and took his hand in hers, squeezing it to both give and receive some comfort.
How do you think they'll take it?
Vince asked, breaking the silence that had descended on them since being left alone. After a quick night's sleep, Dean Blaine had met them at dawn to ask a few questions and outline what was going to happen next for them.
Badly, Nick replied. He's going to confirm the truth about us, and then tell them we're not having to take the final with them. That's not going to help the situation.
That's not our fault, though, Alice said. We didn't ask for our friends to get kidnapped.
No, but we did choose to go after them, Nick pointed out. I'm not trying to say we should be taking it. We're all beat to hell in every way but the literal one. I'm just saying, they won't take that news well, coupled with what they learned last night.
I wonder who dropped that bomb,
Mary said quietly.
I was already out by then, so I didn't get to hear. It was some person from the DJ booth,
Alice said.
It was Michael, Vince corrected.
The others turned to look at him. He merely shrugged. I know what his crazy, screaming voice sounds like. I heard it when he attacked me on Halloween.
He attacked you on Halloween?
Herschel asked.
Why didn't you tell me you knew who it was?
Nick tossed out as well.
Yes, and it didn't seem important at the time, Vince answered in order.
Not important? How is that not important?
Nick demanded.
The secret was already out. What mattered at the time was getting us together and safe. Then when the whole thing happened, it sort of slipped my mind, Vince explained.
Michael, huh? I wonder how he found out. Or why he bothered to out us like that.
Alice speculated. He had something against me. Even though he won our first match, he felt like I made him look bad. That's the only motivation I ever knew about. Vince replied.
We'll make sure to give him a special thank you sometime, Nick said. On the subject, though, why didn't any of us know about the Halloween attack? Vince shrugged again. I got out of it fine. I guess I just didn't want to worry anyone.
Given the events of the past 24 hours, I fear we're going to need to adopt a policy of more information and worry rather than less,
Herschel noted.
Agreed. On the plus side, we're all okay. And we all get to come back next year,
Alice pointed out.
I'd feel a lot safer if we knew what all it was about, though,
Mary said.
Or where Persephone snuck off to.
The collection process of the students and the former coach George had turned up a passenger cab coated in blood, but absent the blonde kidnapper. Given all the distractions of dealing with George, there was no way to estimate when she'd made her escape, though all five said a silent prayer of thanks she'd chosen flight rather than fight. They'd barely coped with just one coach to subdue. Two would have annihilated them.
She'll turn up eventually, Nick assured her. Even the wiliest rat has to come out for food.
I'll feel better when she does,
Mary said.
My telepathy will give me a heads up if she's approaching me now that I'm on guard, but I still don't know how safe I'll feel in my woods all summer.
Good thing you're not going off to the woods alone, then,
Alice told her.
You're spending the summer with me.
Am I?
Mary, you were the target of this whole debacle. The last one of us to be off on their own should be you, Vince said.
I don't think endangering Alice is the right way to address that problem,
Mary replied.
Endangering me? Mary, did you forget the whole my dad is worth more than some countries thing? We don't have a security guard in my home. We have security battalions. Several of them. My father might be an ass, but he takes safety seriously. If Persephone wants to take you from my home, she'd better bring an entire army of supers, or it will be an insult,
Alice said firmly.
I'll have to check with my parents,
Mary said lamely, as she struggled to find another excuse.
Be persuasive, Nick instructed her. I don't particularly feel like repeating tonight's performance anytime soon.
All of you are welcome, too,
Alice added.
I have a whole wing of the house to myself, so you won't be imposing.
It's a generous offer, Herschel said, but I think I'll be okay at home. I'm looking forward to getting back to Chicago for a little while.
Any of us could be targets, though. You should take her offer seriously, Vince said.
I am. And trust me when I say I'm perfectly safe at home. My dad wasn't a billionaire, but he was a renowned hero. Lots of his old partners and friends live on the same street as us and keep an eye out for his family. The neighborhood might look like Sunday picnics and barbecues, but it's got more spandex and laser vision than anyone would suspect.
I suppose that's a pretty safe place, then, Vince conceded.
Agreed, Nick said. And while I appreciate the offer, I'll be declining as well. This year produced an ending I really wasn't expecting. I need to go home and figure out what that means for me, as well as my future at Lander.
You are coming back, though, Vince said.
It's sad that I know you well enough to assume that wasn't a question,
Nick sighed.
I'll probably be back, if for no other reason than this little nuthouse has proven to be excellent training for expecting the unexpected. I'll also add that my place is quite safe in its own regard. Can we take me at my word on that one?
We can, Vince said, before anyone else could raise the fact of just how questionable Nick's word was these days. I'm going to say no as well. I don't have a fortress to return to, but no one will be able to catch what they can't find.
You're going back on the road?
Alice asked.
I am. It's where I feel at home. Well, that and here.
Touching, Nick said. I guess that handles our plan to survive the summer. That just leaves how we'll get through next year, now that everyone knows what we really are.
Anybody got a bright suggestion for that one?
The room was silent, save for the perplexed weatherman on the television, reporting the strange phenomenon to strike the California wildfires. 155. The reactions from most of the student body had been shocked and dismayed, but it was the freshman class filing down the hall to their exams where anger budded most prominently.
"This is utter horseshit,"
Alan Wells complained, his hands itching to dole out some explosions to demonstrate his outrage.
"First we find out they're fucking cowards, then they don't even have to take the test. I wonder who I have to blow to get on the special treatment train."
"We're," said Thomas's flat voice.
"We're what?"
Alan asked.
"They were cowards. Now they're supers," Thomas corrected. "Did you not pay attention at all to the dean's announcement?"
"Oh, I heard him loud and clear. We're all stuck with the standard test to fight for spots while they've just been waved on through,"
Alan snapped back.
"They weren't waved through,"
Will said, joining the discussion.
"Two of them were kidnapped, and then the five of them subdued Coach George. Do you think your test will be harder than that?"
"What the fuck ever? There's no way the coaches would actually do something like that. I'm sure they just objected to the powers being let into the program at all. So now they're being tossed under the bus, just like Michael,"
Alan said.
"I'm with him on this one,"
Terrence stepped forward to add.
"It is sort of crap that they've put Michael under judicial review just for telling everyone the truth."
"He told the truth by breaking into a sound booth and endangering those five,"
Thomas shot back.
"I'm amazed they didn't flat out drop him from the program altogether."
"They didn't do it because they knew we would have rioted if they'd taken it that far,"
Alan said, his voice raising a few octaves. The steady march toward the exam room had slowed as the discussion grew. Now it was grinding to a halt. One partly pink-haired individual never broke stride, though, moving up to the debate from her position in the rear.
"Sasha," Thomas called out, "would you please help me explain to this imbecile that our friends are not the amoral monsters that current opinion seems to paint them as?"
Sasha never looked at him, never slowed down, never even moved her eyes. Her only response was a single pair of words, delivered with such venom that clarification wasn't needed in the slightest.
"Fuck them."
"See? Even one of their girlfriends knows they don't belong here,"
Alan declared triumphantly. Thomas considered pushing the issue further. However, Sasha's comment had taken most of the wind from his sails, and he wasn't sure how to recover the lost ground. Instead, he retook his place in line and shook his head. It was a good thing all five of the Melbrook students had been outed simultaneously, because Thomas had a firm suspicion they were going to be leaning on each other a lot come next year. Dean Blaine poured himself two fingers of scotch, then stepped back. After a moment's consideration, he filled up the rest of the glass. He stared at it for a few more seconds, then went to his cabinet. He emerged holding a much bigger glass, dumped the original glass's contents into it, and then filled it up the rest of the way. The announcement had gone over about as well as he'd expected. It wasn't the initial reaction one had to watch out for in situations like this. No one ever really grasped the full implication of big announcements immediately. No, the part he had to be on guard for was in the weeks to come, when the simmering thoughts would lead people down all the rabbit holes of possibility that he'd pursued himself nearly a year ago. They'd find the same conclusions, too. That this procedure, if evaluated and approved as successful, would significantly alter the landscape of supers and powers, permanently. And while it was a good thing overall, it also meant taking the group that had been seen as secondary and elevating them to the status of equals. Dean Blaine might have slept through his college history courses, but even he knew you didn't have to dig hard to find all the examples of that being a tumultuous process at best. At worst, well, he was going to have to keep an eye on those five next year. He was certain there were plenty of people who would like to see their little experiment declared to be a failure. It was a shame, too. They were good kids. Under different circumstances, a few of them might have even gone all the way, with the right guidance. Dean Blaine took a big gulp of his scotch at that thought. George and Persephone. They'd been teaching here for over 10 years, longer than he'd even been at Lander. For them to have stolen away with students in the middle of the night. Dean Blaine didn't think he would have truly believed it if he hadn't been present to retrieve George's unconscious body. When he was thoroughly secured, Dean Blaine intended to have a very long, very in-depth chat about exactly what the point of their little stunt had been. For right now, though, their absence created a more pressing dilemma. Dean Blaine had only 2.5 months to find adequate replacements for their roles. That included background checks, board approval, negotiations, and training, a process that usually took at least a year to complete. Dean Blaine let out a sigh and drummed his fingers on the desk. He was going to need more scotch. 156. Nick slammed down the hatch on his car and looked up into the bright sky. It figured, the first time all year he genuinely needed sunglasses, and they were lying in a broken heap at the bottom of the trash can. He'd have to pick up a pair of cheapos at the first gas station he passed. The drive from Lander to Vegas wasn't a particularly long one, but it was sunny as a son of a bitch. Alice was nearly done loading her own car as well, Mary's bags packed alongside hers, as they struggled to fit Alice's ever-expanding wardrobe into the limited space a trunk had to offer. Mary was thankful she'd managed to talk Alice out of bringing everything home. They were coming back in a few months, after all. Mary took a step back and popped her back after the labor of packing the bags down. A part of her was sad that she wouldn't be going home for the summer, back to the peace and quiet of her woods. She was a pragmatic girl, though. She understood what her friends had risked by coming after her. To not take her safety seriously after such a gesture would be an insult to all of them, even if they didn't take it that way. Herschel was tossing his final parcel into the car while his mother spoke in hushed tones with Dean Blaine.
"Again, I'm sorry you had to drive all the way out to pick up Herschel," Dean Blaine apologized. "We're just short-staffed of teleporters at the moment."
"It's fine," Mrs. Daniels assured him. "What about their caretakers? After what you've told me, I'd like to have a little discussion with both of them, especially Mr. Transport."
"I'm not clear on much about them at the moment," Dean Blaine replied. "They're currently being debriefed by the company they work for. I haven't received any definitive word on if they'll be replaced next year or not."
"Please keep me in the loop," Mrs. Daniels said, as Herschel walked up to the two. "All done," Herschel said, patting the station wagon proudly.
"Such a strong young man," Mrs. Daniels said.
Why don't you go say goodbye to your girlfriend? We'll be leaving as soon as I take care of something.
Herschel took the hint and set off to give Mary an emphatic, but publicly appropriate, farewell.